Hi, hello. Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women, though all self-lovers are welcome here. I'm Mary. I write and speak about self-love, and I'm best known for my book, The Gift of Self-Love, and I also host retreats for women. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself. Real quick, before we dive in, I want to make sure you know about my book, The Gift of Self-Love. It's a workbook to help you build confidence, recognize your worth, and learn to love who you are. It's available anywhere books are sold. Thousands of people have it, love it, and have told me that it has greatly benefited their self-love journey, and I hope it'll do the same for you. And now let's get into the podcast. This episode is part of our Best of Mary's Cup of Tea series, where I dug through over 250 recordings to synthesize clips from some of my personal favorite episodes. Just like this podcast, the Best of series will cover topics surrounding self-love, including body image, mental health, mindset, confidence, relationships, and women's empowerment as a whole. Think of it as a self-love starter kit for you if you're new to Mary's Cup of Tea, welcome, or a little refresher if you're a seasoned self-lover, in which case, welcome. Come back. If any topic resonates with you, go to the show notes to get links to the full episode. And today's topic is, you know it, you guessed it, friendships, female friendship tips for women who value and crave deep, rich, meaningful connection. We're diving into how to make new friends as an adult and deepen the connections you already have, face conflict with compassion, what to do when the fear of rejection or the tendency to people please gets in the way, and why learning to receive love and support can be just as powerful as giving it. The most common question I hear is, where and how do you even make friends as an adult? We will get there, but before we do so, we need to unpack some of those invisible walls that keep us closed off from connection, because a lot of people fall into two types of avoidance. So like avoiding connection, right? There's overt avoidance, which is like blatantly not going to that holiday work party because you're just not feeling up for it, or purposefully avoiding eye contact and conversation with strangers. That's like overt avoidance. That's, I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to make friends. I'm not open to it, right? We kind of know that. I think most of you are probably not like that. I feel like if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a little bit more of an open individual, but if not, that's okay too. And there's also this part of covert avoidance, which is that like secretive, more subconscious, energetic avoidance, where like you're going to that class, you're hanging out at the cafes, you're doing the right things or showing up to the right places where you could possibly meet friends, but you're a little bit more closed off in your energy, in your body language, in your just kind of like ambiance, right? Like your vibe is just off. Paradoxically, we're also so deeply afraid of being seen for who we are. So sometimes we, again, subconsciously shut down potential people to our own demise. We kind of in advance decide like, well, I don't feel that great about myself, so I don't know why anybody would want to interact with me because I'm not that interesting of a person. And if you have that like deep-rooted belief, then please start there and please start working on self-worth in general, because if you don't, the type of people that are going to come into your life are going to be the not so great people that maybe take advantage of you or that think they're better than you because you think they're better than you. Do you know what I mean? So it is important to use all the principles of self-love that we talk about on this podcast to be aligned on a subconscious level, to work through those core beliefs that you have about yourself, and then kind of have this like sense of openness. You can't see me, but I'm physically opening my arms and straightening up my back and like opening my body to receiving. Personally, I've been going to the same yoga class every single week for almost 2 years now, ever since I got vaccinated. I started going to this one class. Actually, it's twice a week. It's the same instructor. The same people are in it. 2 years every single week. There's 52 weeks in a year, two classes. That's like over 200 classes that I've attended. And it wasn't until recently, like literally the past couple of months, that I've actually made friends with and gotten to know the people in my yoga class, including my yoga teacher. And it's because for 2 years, there was this kind of covert avoidance. Granted, there was COVID and it is a little bit harder to connect with masks on, but there was also this like just weird energy in the air where like you don't know where people stand socially, politically, health-wise, right? That kind of fed into this situation I noticed that I was showing up in the same place every single week. I was probably a familiar face. I've definitely seen familiar faces. I wanted to be friends. Until this day, I am working on getting to know the people in that class. But it is such a joy to come early and stay late. So with that being said, let's talk about like where to make friends. You gotta go to the places that you are interested in. Now you might be thinking, Mary, my future partner or my future bestie does not take calligraphy classes on a Saturday afternoon. The fuck yes, they do. Fuck yes, they do. You have no idea. You would be surprised what people do in their free time. You would be surprised what kind of extraordinary people you will meet in the most unexpected places. Libraries. Perfect example. I go into my local library. Granted, I live in a suburb of Arizona that is like 60% people over 60 years old. And I never in my life think that I could ever meet anybody at a library on a Wednesday afternoon because I have that kind of flexibility. And I just assume that other 20, 30 year olds are at work at that time. And there's going to be nobody but old ladies knitting and reading books at the library. False. I go to the library on Wednesday afternoon and there are young people there. There are older people there. There are middle-aged people there, all walks of life, kids, so many different humans. Speaking of being surprised, you would be surprised what kinds of people can become your friends. It does not matter like how old they are or where they're from, what walk of life, socioeconomic status, none of that crap matters. Shared interests matter. Shared energy and openness, that's what creates friendship. Connection is our life force and source. And it does not depend on materialistic, superficial things. I'm sure you know that in your head, but I just want to drill that into your heart, that your favorite library, your favorite cafe, that class that you've always been interested in taking, but you feel weird going to it alone, go. Same with that meetup or event, go. Just go. Another place that you might meet people is online. I've met nearly all of my closest friends online. I met Boyfriend on Hinge. I think the friend equivalent of a dating app is Bumble BFF, which I have been on before, and I've made a couple connections. My really good friend Dolly, I found through an Instagram hashtag because I was looking for creatives to connect with in Phoenix. And I think I typed in like Phoenix photographer and she came up and I slid into her DMs and now we're best friends. My friend Leslie Ann, she found me online. She came to one of my self-love retreats and we have just grown really close, like despite the distance. She lives in a different state. Actually, so do a lot of my friends. So don't let distance scare you. You can definitely make a long distance friendship work. You're probably listening thinking like, okay, Mary, you're at an advantage because this is like your work. Well, actually, it's the opposite. Like when I moved back to Arizona in 2018, after living in Canada for 2 years, I was living with my parents. I was so lonely. My only job was online. I started Mary's Cup of Tea. And for about 2 years, I just, again, fed into that story of, oh, my whole job is online, so it's impossible to make friends. Even though I was taking college classes daily, right? Why didn't I make friends in college? Because I was covertly avoiding. And so there are probably areas in your life or places that you're already showing up to that you're just not allowing for the possibility that your friends might be there. So see what happens. Like, take inventory of where you currently spend your time outside of your house and see what's possible there. Who can you connect with? And online and digital spaces count. Our world is becoming increasingly digital, so there's no reason why you can't make friends online. Actually, I hosted a series of online retreats back in 2020 and 2021, and there are still group chats going till this day. And I see pictures of people organizing meetups. They met at an online retreat when we did our Zoom workshop, and then they made this group chat. Now they're literally hanging out in real life. I mean, it's so cool. So don't write off internet friends, because you'd be surprised. I think that's the theme of this podcast episode. You'd be surprised. Surprise yourself. Let people surprise you. Actually, someone who was in my group coaching program back in 2020 DM'd me a photo from her wedding, and one of her bridesmaids was someone that she met at that online retreat all of those years ago. So they stayed in touch in the group chat and then took it off the group chat and maintained the personal connection. It is just so beautiful to see what is possible when you are open and committed. But even though you can make friends online and have meaningful long-distance friendships, here's the problem I still run up against from my conversation with Kat Velos, a connection coach who is big on becoming friends with your neighbors. Something I'm personally dealing with is a recent friend separation and kind of feeling lonely in my day-to-day life, although having a lot of wonderful people that I'm connected to. It's just that they're far away in proximity. So it creates kind of this vicious cycle where I constantly feel like I'm not being a good enough friend to my long-distance friends. And, you know, all the group chats, and I host retreats for a living, so I do get really close to people really fast. But then after a retreat, it is hard to continue staying connected to large groups of people, let alone on an individual basis. Yeah. So I don't think I'm the only one who maybe technically like has friends or has people to reach out to, but yet lacking the community that you see on like a consistent ritualistic basis, or like, you know, that Friends fantasy, like the show where they all live in the same building and they get together on like random weeknights. So anyway, what do you make of this? What's happening?
I want to first like start by validating your experience. It's something that's so known to so many millions of us. And unfortunately, where we live, in often these cities, small, medium, mid-size, big, huge cities, some of us, our cities are not designed for us to live lives of connection. They're designed for us to drive, to spend money, to be alone, except we'll call that aloneness independence. And what it takes to feel true community are usually not those things. I'm going to tell you everything that I did to solve this problem. My actions, as someone who wrote a book about friendship, some of my actions are based on evidence-based research about what works for connection. And some of them are just based on my creative intuition as an artist, as a social artist, as someone who loves community. So if you want to have more social interaction nearby, and everybody doesn't have to be your bestie, you can be like loose acquaintances, hey, people I chat with on the sidewalk, and then some people who you hang out with closer, whatever. Start by making friends, or at least making acquaintances with the people who already live near you. This is the absolute best option for having more friendships that don't feel like a lot of work to maintain and that are easier to fit into the life that you're living. So you can introduce yourself to the neighbors on your block or in your apartment building. You can ask people you know, hey, do you know anybody who lives in this neighborhood or this region? I'd love to meet more people nearby, and I would love to know your friends, to be like friends of friends with your friends. People like to make introductions. So that's a way to double opt in, say yes to that. Another thing you can do, it's a little bit more work, but there's a great example of this. I have it linked on a blog post of mine about living by neighbors. You can convince your friends to move to your neighborhood or move to your apartment building if you see that there are openings. I have done this for a lot of friends because I'm invested in living near my friends. So when they say they're looking for an apartment, I'm like, ooh, let me open Zillow and I will try to get them to move to my neighborhood. Another thing that you can do is to become a regular at a third place. And for any listeners who aren't familiar with the concept of a third place, our first place is home. Our second place is work. Or if you work at home, you have that at the same time. But the third place is neither work nor home, and it's a place where you go to spend time purely for enjoyment. Some people it's a gym, some people it might be a coffee shop, a bar, a brewery. It could be the rock climbing walls people like to do. I tried it once, but anyway, it's a place that you go where you can be social and you can interact with other people without making plans and where you are always welcome to come in. And so if you become a regular at a very local third place, you will have spontaneous social time so easily, and it'll be something that just fits into your day. It's something you wanted to do anyways. The person who coined the term third place was Ray Oldenburg. He wrote a book called The Great Good Place. It's absolutely fabulous if you love this topic. And he actually turned his garage into a third place. He made it a little pub, and it was like his third place pub garage. A friend of mine did this many years ago in her kitchen by every Sunday having Sunday dinner. She was like, on Sunday evenings, she sent this huge long email list of friends. She's like, on Sundays, I'm having dinner. You can come by. You can stay for as long as you like. I'm going to be making dinner. My kitchen table is the place you are welcome on Sunday evening. All of these things are options, and you get to choose your own adventure. But I do recommend, if you want to stay home, do something like she did and turn your home into that gathering place. If you need to get out of the house more often, then go do these other things, right? Getting out, checking out your third places, meeting your neighbors, going to community gatherings, all those kinds of things.
I read that blog post where that lady really committed to six yes. months of making friends. That was so inspiring. Mm-hmm. And all the pictures too were so fun to see. I highly recommend people check that out. I'll link it in the description. But this is somebody who was like a maniac on a mission to get all the ladies connected. And you could just tell that not only did she get so much out of it, but the other people in the photos were like grateful that she was the connector.
For sure. And that's the gift that you offer when you go out on a limb and you take that step to see, like, even if only three people come, that's three people who are like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I showed up to this gathering. I'm so glad I met you. Those are three people who feel less lonely. You know, it doesn't have to be 20 people or 50 people. Sometimes we just need a couple.
After that conversation with Kat, I got so inspired and ended up implementing her advice quite literally. I invited all of my neighbors for kebabs and sangrias. And during this neighborhood block party, I actually got close to a gal who lives diagonally from me. I've been eyeing her for many years. The whole time I've lived here, I knew we would be good friends, but didn't know how to break past those barriers. And one too many sangrias does help, I'm not gonna lie. But we have since taken our little friendship dates elsewhere, and I'm excited to nurture that connection. If you want to know more about how I put together this neighborhood block party, what I got from it, Kat interviewed me for her blog and wrote this like beautiful case study about what it can look like to bring together the people who live close to you, even when you have never spoken to them before. Which was literally my case. I'll link that blog post for you in the description. And now here's my personal advice about how to make your current friendships a little bit closer, stronger, more emotionally rich. Which brings me to one idea that has been like, now that I see it, I can't unsee it. Catch-up culture. And I know there's a lot of cultures like diet culture, hustle culture, like we hate all these cultures, but catch-up culture specifically makes so much sense to me because I see it, I feel it, I experience it with my own friendships. And that is the type of relationship where you call somebody on the phone and you're like, so what's new? And then you recount how your week has been, what's going good, what's going bad. You're just kind of like telling people the events, and then they do the same for you, right? And there might be some like gossip, a little drama, like there's not really a huge discussion of ideas and like deep, intricate, nuanced opinions. Do you know a lot about your best friend's upbringing and childhood? Like, what's their favorite memory? There's some friends that I'm like, I don't even know like your favorite food. How did they meet their partner? Like, do you know all of those stories? Were you around for that? Because chances are, unless you were around for a lot of those events, there are things about the people in your life that you don't know, that you won't know unless you care to find out. But again, the way that we meet up and hang out and spend time isn't really conducive to really getting to know someone. And I invite you to be the friend who suggests fun, new, cool, weird activities to do together. Like go on the other side of town to that thrift store or record shop or tea room. Like go find those places and just go do them together. Like go on a hike, do a camping or a cabin trip together. You know, some people that I didn't even know that well, I randomly invited them to a cabin up in Utah and they were from Colorado. And like they showed up. They drove 11 hours and showed up, and it was the highlight of that year. We still think about it. Like it was just so beautiful, and we didn't really know each other at first, but guess what? We got to know each other. We had a giant adult sleepover for, I think it was 2 or 3 nights with people that I knew were like-hearted, and it made for some of the best memories ever. So really like sharing experiences together, unique shared experiences will always bring you closer. Another thing is like, if you are really busy, you live like a fast-paced life, you have a lot to do, I think we can all relate to that. One thing I did with my friend who I don't see very much because she's a new mom, has her own business, like hard to make plans and set aside that time. I was like, what are you doing today? She's like, oh, I got to go grocery shop with my family. I got to go run this errand, that errand. I'm like, I'm going to pull up and let me go run errands with you. Like, let me go grocery shopping with you. Like, at least we'll get to spend time together and just like dick around at the Whole Foods. It's better than us not seeing each other at all. If anything, digging around at the Whole Foods is probably just so much more like new and fresh and fun than the basic ass cocktail that we resort to. Don't be afraid to like step out of the box and just like invite yourself places and invite people places and just be that person that creates those shared experiences for your friend group. And I'm going to end this with the what portion of things. Stop with the damn dinner dates. Like, I don't know why I feel so passionately about it. I think I'm just getting like so bored of boring ass dinner dates in the same place. Try to step out of the box and do something different. Or at the very least, whatever experience you're organizing, and hopefully it'll leave the group chat, ask yourself, like, how can you make it special? So if you're doing a dinner date, like, can you bring questions or prompts or a game? Take a minute on your drive over there to think about, like, what do I really want to know about this person? And just like, ask them a random question. Like, my favorite is, what's your favorite childhood memory? Ask them that and like go around the table and share that. And there's plenty of like prompts you could probably find online. I think there's like question games, or give the event or whatever you're doing a theme, a dress code. Like, I think that puts you on the same page before you even meet up, so that you already feel like you're doing something together from as early as getting dressed for meeting up. This comes from a book called The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker. I talked about this in the wedding episode with my husband. The Art of Gathering is really about how do you bring people together in a sacred, intentional, memorable way so that you walk away feeling like connected and whole and fulfilled and like just excited about spending time with people. And one of the things that Priya Parker writes about is that your gathering starts as early as the invitation. So even like the way you send that text or that Evite or the phone call or whatever you're organizing, the theme of the event, like any little thing that you can bring. Okay, so then when you organize this experience, consider changing up the location. Even if you're like a mom who meets your friends at the park to hang out with the kids and get some adult time, can you suggest visiting a different park? If you're usually going out for dinner, like, can you organize a no pressure potluck at your home? Why don't we do no pressure potlucks more often? That's one thing that I promised myself I would organize at least once this summer, is a no pressure potluck with my friends. Like, just come over, bring whatever you can or want. I'll have snacks and let's hang out and play board games. To me, that sounds better than a dinner date, personally, just something different. I think it all just depends on like, what do you usually default to, and then do like the complete opposite, or just try to push yourself out of that comfort zone to create those shared experiences. Remember that spontaneous cabin trip I mentioned? Well, someone who was crazy enough to show up to that is my friend Jessie Jean. She is a master gatherer of friends herself. And here's a clip from a wonderful conversation I had with Jessie about how to take your friendships to a deeper level.
I think there's a little bit of a misconception that if you built following on social media. You must be this social butterfly. You must have this really big community. And we've had conversations a lot recently about feeling lost and, you know, feeling lonely and trying to make friends as an adult. And I think these are all themes that a lot of people can relate to. I am curious what your experiences have been with loneliness or with making friends as an adult.
Also, something that I'm, you know, constantly working on is building community, having a solid friend group. Mm-hmm. It's always hard to meet new people when you feel new to yourself, if that makes sense. Because you're like, you know, when I go to pickleball and we're making small talk in between games and people are like, what do you do? And I'm like, don't know.
Right? And share my struggles online.
Yeah. Well, the struggle bus. What about you? And they're like, I work at JP Morgan Chase Bank as a customer account manager.
And you're like, right, right. That sounds awesome.
Same. So putting yourself out there can be that much harder when you don't know which part of yourself, you know, feels real and true, let alone safe to share with others. I can't say that I'm exactly where I want to be with friends and community, but mm-hmm. I've definitely come so far. And what I've found that helps me actually create a sense of community without necessarily coming up to somebody and being like, do you want to be friends? And then, you know, being besties and having sleepovers with each other like you're in high school, which I really do want to get there. Don't get me wrong. I'm just not there yet. But I think if you want to create community. Communities thrive off of rituals, and rituals can be literally every Tuesday, I see the same people in my yoga class. You know, mm-hmm. every Saturday morning, I see the same people at the coffee shop. Every, mm-hmm. you know, Sunday, I go to church, like whatever that is for people. Mm-hmm. It's not that you showed up to church on one Sunday and you made all these friends. It's that you kept coming back. You kept creating a sense of familiarity. And one aspect that often gets overlooked, but in order to build connection with others, you have to allow yourself to linger. Otherwise, you're not going to be like open and available to meeting new people. But that sense of like, I'm here, I'm available, you know, hanging out in like an open body position. I like to guide people at retreats to like have an open body position that tells your brain also that you're open to receiving new connection. And that's been helping a lot.
I think you're so spot on. Like we have to keep showing up places and we have to keep putting forth effort. And I love this idea of lingering and being open. I used to be so head down. Like I lived in survival mode for so many years. And when I would go out in public, like I wouldn't talk to people. I was always on a mission. And that was because I was so, like, I was just so focused on making sure I had time to weigh, track, measure, prep mm-hmm. all my food for the week and get my workouts in and make sure I got my work done. And it was just so self-absorbed and self-consumed. I couldn't even like engage in conversation with a cashier when I was, you know, checking out of the grocery store. And so this idea of being available was something that I definitely had to learn. And my intention this year is to be a good friend. Like, I don't know how to be a good friend. I had a really painful best friend breakup from my high school best friends. I had a really good group and we went through a falling out, and I didn't know at that point. I'm like, I don't know. Like they were just, you know, school just brought us together and now I don't know how to make friends. And so I made it my intention. This was many years ago. And, you know, I would do things for people that you might not expect in a friendship to do at the point in the relationship mm-hmm. that we were at, you know, like it's a little much for the point of the relationship, but I'm like, how do you get there unless you just show up and do those types of things for people? And so I think through that, for example, I started many, many years ago creating birthday videos for my friends. And so the very first one I did was actually in 2020. And this was a friend. And I just always appreciated the energy that he brought our crew. And just like, he just did so much for us. And I wanted to show love and care and kindness. And my husband and I decided we were going to do this for him. And what we did was we found all of the people in his life that meant something to him, his friends, his family, people that we didn't even know. And I got all of their contact information and I asked if they would submit like a couple minute long video. And I compiled all of this together. And when we were camping at Yellowstone in the Grand Tetons one night, I pulled out my laptop and we were sitting around the fire. We played this birthday video for him. He had no idea. Wow. And some things that happened in his life, the pandemic like really threw a wrench in some of his life plans. Like he had been saving for years to go on this sabbatical and he was going to, you know, travel the world. Basically, it saved so much money over all these years. He quit his job and he was going to go travel the world. 1 week into his travels, the pandemic hit and it just like, it was just really a really hard time for him. And so this birthday video, I started doing this for my friends and it just meant a lot to them. And I think through that and through just intentionality, it's brought our crew closer together and we've formed this really dynamic friend group. But that takes, you know, that takes time and it takes energy. And I know it can be really hard when, you know, we're all busy and we're running a million miles an hour, but those would be some of my tips.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think you're so good at going above and beyond for people in general, like anybody who's in your circle. And to make it a little bit more approachable to somebody who's like, I don't know how to video edit, let alone compile this.
You don't have to go to that length. Yeah.
I just have a couple of ideas. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head where it has to be a little bit weird. It has to be a little bit out there. And my husband actually would fight about this until he realizes that every time I'm right, like I'm actually genuinely right on this one. And he always comes back to admit it. So I will always do something like a little for you. I think that looks like going above and beyond. For me, that's a little bit more sideways into the realm of like pleasantly surprising, unexpected, and nothing too big. Like one of my really good friends and I, over the past year, we kind of went through periods of drifting apart, not talking, thinking our friendship was over and slowly coming back together. And after 6 months of not really speaking to each other, we started reconnecting. And our husbands were still friends through all of this, and they had plans to hang out Saturday night. And she texted me Saturday afternoon, and this was after we were like rekindling, like things were still a little bit raw and fresh. And she's like, hey, I know the boys are hanging out tonight. Maybe you and I can go do something too. And I looked at my husband. I was in the car with him, and I'm like, I'm nervous. I feel weird about this. I don't know if I want to like do this right now. And then I was like, you know what? Actually, I think it could be very low stakes and very easy and fun and also feel like no time was lost if, and I texted her this, I said, hey girl, I actually just defrosted a salmon that I was going to cook tonight. And if I defrosted it a couple of days ago. So if I don't cook it tonight, like it's going to go bad. Is it okay if I bring this salmon over and cook it at your house? And my husband thought that was so fucking weird. He's like, yeah, he was like, you're going to smell up their whole house. You're going to stink it up. You barely talked. You're not that close anymore. You can't just bring a salmon over to her house. And I fought him on it. I was like, no, I can and I will. And I think she's going to be really into it because we both have like similar cultures, similar like, you know, taste buds. We've always shared that. And I'm like, I think she's going to really appreciate this salmon dinner. I came over to her house with this salmon. She made broccoli. We did some side dishes and we ended up having like a really intimate candlelit dinner.
Oh, the four of us.
Completely unexpectedly, like completely unexpectedly. I think it would have been 10 times more awkward if her and I would have gone out for a drink just because we felt like we had to rekindle our friendship. And so all I'm saying in my bizarre monologue here is that it just takes a little bit of weird, a little bit of familiarity.
If you just roll with things, like most people want to connect. Most people are hungry for connection. I think we all have such walls up. We have these guards and we're afraid of what people are going to think about us. But I think if we just allow people to see us for who we are and we act as if, like act as if somebody is your friend. And if it turns out like they don't want to be your friend or it doesn't feel right, okay, whatever. But there's like no harm in just acting as if. And in fact, I think what you're saying is like it makes it less awkward.
Self-love is inherently relational. It does not exist in a vacuum. We need people in our lives to show us love, just like we do for them. That give and take exchange of loving energy is ultimately what can lead us to connect with ourselves better. But we can't do that without connecting with others. And the way that we bring these people into our lives, the way that we build community and nurture it, is by gathering. Priya Parker is here to teach us about the art of gathering.
Gatherings, like these moments in time, these events where three or more people come together to do something, is when you basically have on display the decisions that represent, at some level, for a moment in time, who you are. And part of the way norms get shaped is through ritual. And so often in our weddings, in our baby showers, in our funerals, in these kind of collective life moments, community moments, when we don't pause to actually ask, like, what is the purpose? We replicate forms that sometimes we don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
We don't change our cultural norms and beliefs by saying, like, you should do this instead,
mm-hmm.
right? These are deeply ingrained values that by shifting a ritual, but also then honoring a specific way, help us think and actually reflect, like, what are the rituals that create and shape who we want to be? And I'm a conflict resolution facilitator. That's still my day job. That's my craft. I wrote The Art of Gathering as a dialogue facilitator. I'm not an events planner. I'm not a wedding planner. I'm like a terrible cook. and part of the reason I wrote this book is in part because two things. One is I could see that so much of what we're taught in popular culture is that if you want to host a beautiful gathering, you have to shape the things, right? A beautiful cake, beautiful flowers, perfect lighting. And it's not that that's not part of the context and beauty, but this shouldn't be the only source of meaning. And as facilitators, we're taught how to create connection between people, how to create meaning between people. Relationships are full of conflict, and conflict meaning like a clash of interests, a clash of needs, a clash of desires, a gap between what the two of you or the four of you, the six of you in a community, you know, think you want. And at some deep level, like when you allow yourself to identify and articulate your needs with other people and then negotiate and listen through them, like that is a deeply democratic act. We have to begin to think when you don't have inherited forms, frankly, when the forms weren't designed for you, it gives us an opportunity to actually pause and ask this like deeply sacred question, which is how now shall we live? How now shall we do this? And so when we pause and actually ask that, it's this deeply generative question, but you can't really go around the conflict because it's actually the core elements that allow the spark, allow the fire, if you will. But so often, like the ways we gather is kind of how we live. It's our opportunity to shape who we are. It's like these tiny little declarations that allow people to meaningfully connect without all having to be the same.
Speaking of conflict, here's friendship expert Danielle Bayard Jackson on navigating tension with our girlfriends.
A lot of times when we conjure up an image of conflict in women's friendships, we might picture a scene from The Real Housewives reunion. We picture these explicit explosions of cursing each other out and that huge drama. Yet the picture you just painted was provided, you know, examples of the little things. You took my joke wrong. I haven't talked to you. You know, this comment you made, I'm sure you meant nothing by it, but like, oh, it stung. That is also conflict. You know, the best way I can describe it, and I think this is a good way to start getting better at conflict in friendship, is to first give yourself permission to have it, which sounds super simple. But what I've noticed is at the root of a lot of our conflicts is we don't expect to have any with our friends. We anticipate it in every other context. I know I'm going to fuss with my kids. I know I'm going to see things differently from my employees. I know that with my husband, we already know we're going to have our issues and then we're going to be like, oh, it made us stronger. Yeah. There's something about women's friendships where we subscribe to the idea that you should just know. I don't know if it's because you're another woman or because this is friendship, but a lot of the stories and messaging around friendship is somebody who just gets me and we have this chemistry. So then when things do happen, a lot of us see it as evidence that I guess we weren't as close as I thought. But we don't really do that in other contexts. So first giving ourselves permission and space to say, oh yeah, I anticipate there are going to be times when your needs, boundaries, goals, and preferences begin to compete with mine. Because we're two people bringing that on the table. And sometimes it will not be aligned. The timing is going to be wrong and it's clunky. Now we've got to get to the business of figuring this out, repairing and reconciling, because the relationship is more important to me than being right. I feel like it's even more urgent that we figure it out in friendship because it's also the most ambiguous relationship we'll ever have. You know how things go with your boss, your mom, your boyfriend. Like, we know the terms and conditions. With friendships, we kind of don't. For some of us at the beginning, we don't even know if we are friends. I mean, we go to coffee and stuff, but you're thinking like, I don't know. I feel like she's my, we don't even know if we are. So there's so much ambiguity. What did she mean by that? Should I follow up or is it on her? There's so much ambiguity. Your job in friendship especially should be to reduce the ambiguity as much as possible. So she said something, I'm not sure what she meant. Let me ask. Instead of the whole like, okay, that felt shady. That was rude. I don't know exactly. Let me ask. I think it will cut our conflict in half. And to your point, I'll end with this. I do think life transitions do make things tricky because we have a rhythm. We have all these things going. Now somebody gets married, moves, has a baby, and we've got to give ourselves grace. We've never been friends like this before. We've never been friends with somebody having a husband. And now we have this third party to consider if you can come out tonight or things like that. We've never been friends with one of us having a baby. And now you don't have the cognitive capacity to maybe remember things I've shared with you because you're exhausted because you got 3 hours of sleep. You know, so we've never done friendship like this. Can we give ourselves permission to negotiate? What can it look like now? But I think those mindset shifts make it a little bit easier to navigate the hard stuff.
Hey, self-lover, sorry to interrupt, but do you have my self-love playlist? There's over 300, if not 400 songs on it that are so fun and uplifting and empowering, and I think will really be perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, dealing with a bad body image day, or anytime you just want a little boost of self-love, these tracks will do it for you. So head to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get it and know that I am dancing and jamming with you from afar. Cheers. Here's a bit more from Danielle about the quantity and quality of our social life.
I want to hit you with two studies first, and then we'll kind of synthesize and figure this out. So there's one that a lot of people have heard of by now, but by Robert Dunbar, he argues that you only have the cognitive capacity to maintain 3 to 5 ultra close relationships. So if we think of that as like a little circle and then concentric circles around it, like getting bigger and bigger, then each ring represents more people, but you're closer to them to a lesser degree, right? So 3 to 5 people, he argues that you can be super close with, right? Now, these are our strong ties. All those people in those outer rings are what, you know, sociologists refer to as weak ties. But the research shows you need those too. So just as a very specific example, they find that people are more likely to find a job through someone from their weak tie because they've got 1 foot in your world and 1 foot in another world because they're way out here. We need them too. They boost our mood. They share resources. They connect us to things. So these are people who I'm not close to, but they add value in my life. Like whenever I see you, it's a good time or I'm learning something or whatever. Okay. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The second thing I want to share is there was a very small research study. I feel like I need to emphasize it was very small, but I do see evidence of it anecdotally. And they find that only 50% of your friendships are reciprocal, meaning I might see you kind of like as a tier 1 friend, but you kind of see me as like a tier 3 friend. Now, people feel very strongly about that. And the research shows that women really value mutual prioritization in their friendships. So we like knowing we're each other's number 1, okay? And we feel some kind of way when it's not even, right? Because that symmetry is important. But the reality is all my friends aren't going to all see me on the same level. And we all see, that's just not true. And I hope this doesn't sound harsh, but there are some women in my life who I kind of see them as like a tier 3, like she's cool. But for her, I'm like a tier 2, tier 1. Because of the way that her social network has been constructed over the course of her life, I am one of her top friends. But for me, I maybe already have people in that space, or maybe I'm getting different things from her. So she's like my hangout girl, but I don't feel comfortable, you know, with the next level, like praying with her and laughing with her. You know, it's just different. With that being said, expectations are kind of fluid and they need to be appropriately attached. Maybe I expect that in friendship generally, that people prioritize it. And I want active friendships. Maybe personally, I'm not cool with the sending memes once a month. I want more, right? And I'm not knocking it. Sometimes we're in a season. Sometimes we're burned out and we feel like that's all we've got. And that's fine. That's not for me. Maybe it's for me with some of my weaker ties where I don't expect much else. That's what we do. But in my close 3 to 5, no, ma'am. And it's not like, oh, I have high standards, but the way I do friendship, my friendship style just might not be compatible with yours. Because with my 3 to 5, I do want people so close in my life that I can say, oh, crap, I think I left my flat iron on. Can you get your key and go over and unplug it for me? I don't really have that with my meme once a month friends, but I have that with my, we chat every day, every other day. You come over while my kids are here and we do craft night and we go to dinner and we go to church together. With those friends, I need that kind of, we're doing life together. And that's a higher standard expectation for those people. I do get concerned, I'm going to be real, with the people who all your friends
are best friends.
Are best friends, or all your friends are weak tie, meme every other week friends. We need that texture. I need my tight people and my people who I kind of see every so often, because I do have limited hours. Time is a limited resource. So this is to my extroverts who want to be besties with everybody. You're going to be burned out. You're going to feel overworked. You're going to feel like, man, I'm trying to see all my people, but I can't get, because at some point you are going to have to be strategic. I don't mean to kill the buzz. Who are your 3 to 5 people you really want to go deep with? Because you only have so much in the reserves. And everybody else, maybe I see you in the group hang once a month, or we're in a group chat and it's fun. But to really be seen and known, that takes work. I mean, these two girls I referred to earlier, the reason I have space in my brain to remember the important things about work or the guy they're dating or the update on the health scare. It's not that I'm such an awesome friend. I've only got so much space. And I choose to have like these few girls in the space. And everybody else maybe gets Sun Danielle, or we hang and we go deep once every other month. But in order to show up really well here, I have to be strategic at some point, you know, and I've got kids and 2 businesses. I got to be strategic. I also am open to the fact that that's fluid and who my top girls are now. I mean, I hope they stay my top girls for life, but who my top people are now, that might change when somebody has a baby or moves. Maybe a new girl moves to town next week and we have this very specific thing in common and find ourselves really chatting a lot over it. It's fluid. You know, friendships are dynamic. And I think we know that intellectually, but when they're actually changing before our eyes, it becomes really difficult to navigate.
This is one of those interviews that I really want you to listen to in its entirety. In that conversation, I share about the worst best friend breakup I've ever been through. And Danielle's advice is absolutely amazing. It was just a bit too long to include in this best of series, but I'll link it for you in the show notes. Okay, I'm sure you already feel like we've unpacked friendships enough, but wait, there's more. We're going to take it one step further and talk about platonic partnership. Have you ever heard that phrase?
Back in 2020, journalist Raina Cohen, she wrote an article for The Atlantic titled, "What If Friendship, Not Marriage, Was at the Center of Life?" Not only did this piece go viral, but it also paved the way for Raina Cohen's book, The Other Significant Others, about reimagining the role of friendships in our lives. My favorite quote from Raina's book is, "We make romantic relationships more fragile by expecting too much of them, while we undermine friendships by expecting too little of them." I feel like this is a hot take in this day and age because in the mental health space especially, there is so much talk about boundaries, cutting people out of your life if they don't fulfill all your needs, a really harsh, individualistic approach to relationships under the guise of protecting your peace and self-care. And of course, this podcast is about self-care and self-love, but do you think we might have overcorrected in some ways and maybe sacrificing what could have been a very fulfilling friendship? Here's Raina's perspective on that.
Ultimately, the things that matter in life require going through some difficulty, and it's, you know, not throwing out the baby with the bathwater too early. But the point that I'm trying to make with the putting too much on romantic relationships and then asking too little of friendships is, you know, on the first front, I think we've started to hear some of that from most famously Esther Perel, who talked about how we ask of one person what we used to ask of a village. And there are also psychologists on the research side who have looked at the changing expectations in marriage and romantic relationships, and that we are really setting ourselves up for disappointment by putting all of our eggs in one basket, or as one person I interviewed called it, creating one-stop shopping romantic relationships where you expect to get everything and, you know, just different aisles of the same proverbial building. And so the flip side of that for me is, like, what about our friendships? And when you look at the kind of language people use and the expectations they have of romantic partners, it really crowds out space for friends, where your spouse is supposed to be your best friend. I was just talking to somebody yesterday who had been to a friend's wedding, and the vows were all about how the bride and groom were each other's best friends. And, you know, then you have the people on the stage who are the maid of honor and the groomsmen and everybody. And it's like, well, I guess they're not the best friends anymore. There's like this demotion that happens. So I really think that instead of having this kind of seesaw where you have friendships at the bottom and romantic relationships having kind of all the value at the top, that we can even the scales a little bit and maybe not be so unrealistic about asking for everything from romantic partners. And then seeing friendships as legitimately important relationships that we would invest some of the same kind of time and energy that we think only should go to romantic partners.
In case you're listening to this thinking, well, my boyfriend, girlfriend, or spouse is my best friend. So is my husband. But I also know that that comes with pressure on him to fulfill so many roles for me. My best friend, my lover, my soulmate, my emotional support, my social companion, my business partner, my consultant, my family, my hiking buddy, my pickleball partner, and everything else under the sun. I've actually felt relief from him when I say, I'm going to play pickleball tonight. And he's like, do you want me to come? And I have learned to say, like, no, not really. Not unless you want to. And it used to be that I would be like, babe, please, are you sure you don't want to play? Come with me. I don't want to go alone. But when I say, no, I don't want you to come, I'm playing with friends tonight, I feel like relief over him because he gets time to himself. He gets to do whatever activity he enjoys. He doesn't have to be glued to me at all times. And again, fulfill so many roles. So it's probably healthy if your partner is your close friend, but they don't have to be your one and only best friend. Here's Raina on how she met her best friend and how that felt for her.
So I met Em not that long after I moved to DC, which is where I now live. I still remember the night in a bar in DC where I saw her across the room, and I just knew I wanted to talk to her because of the way she was leaning into conversation with other people and making them laugh. There was something that was magnetic about her. And I did manage to talk to her, and we clicked despite barely being able to hear each other in this bar, and discovered pretty quickly that we lived a 5-minute walk from each other. And the combination of us having that initial click or like spark in our friendship and being able to see each other so often meant that we became close really quickly in a way that I, you know, had maybe some parallels to the kind of intensity of like camp or college environments. But it felt like pretty quickly we got to a place where even the idea of being best friends was not totally sufficient to describe who we were to each other. And I started to ask questions about, you know, why do we think that only romantic partners can be the one you bring as a plus one? Because we were bringing each other as plus ones to our office parties, and we were hosting parties at our homes together. We're kind of operating as a unit, not one that was sealed to the rest of the world. We had a lot of our own friends and shared friends, but there was something that felt a little bit different than what I'd experienced. And then that sent me off to like look into history and see if there were friendships like these, because I'd had some memory of reading about it. And I started to tally some people I knew in my own life over the years who had these sorts of friendships. And the whole project was really catalyzed by the questions that my friendship with Em set off.
Why don't we value, treasure, cherish, and celebrate our friendships as they are?
This was a huge question that I was trying to understand. Like, why do we see romantic relationships as fundamentally more valuable than friendships? And, you know, it was like hard to sort through, but I would say basically what I got to is that we think of romantic relationships as one where you are building a future with someone and that there are a lot of stakes to it. Like if you are going on a first date with somebody, you're kind of like trying to figure out, could I fall in, you know, assuming you're working toward a relationship as opposed to something that's more casual, like in the back of your mind, it might be like, could I fall in love with this person? Could I share a home with this person? You might not, you certainly, I don't think would say that on a first date if you wanted to get to a second date, might be coming on too strong, but that's kind of fundamentally what's going on. Versus with a friend, if you get coffee with them for the first time, you know, it's those prospects are not on the table for most people. Like, am I going to raise a child with this person? Am I going to live with them? Those things end up happening incidentally to some people if, you know, as I end up kind of documenting and as I found. But I think that it's the idea that you can have a shared future with somebody and that there is this commitment involved that really makes us venerate romantic relationships. And there's some kind of tradition tied as well, like to marriage in particular. But you know, my thinking is like, let's pay attention to what's happening inside relationships rather than the form they take or the label. So if the thing we care about is commitment, that someone's going to be by your side when you get sick, or that you are going to be with each other for the long haul, those things are not necessarily tied to sex and sparks. Those can happen within friendships. And even if it is not, you know, there's not such an obvious pathway as dating provides for potential romantic partners, we can just appreciate what's happening in the relationships.
So how do we deepen our friendships?
A tip from Kat Velos, who does like work on friendship coaching. And one of the things that she talks about is, or an idea is to be in contact with somebody for 10 days straight. So this friend and I agreed to send voice memos for 10 days. And it ended up being not every day, but we sort of kept it up and we shared what was happening in our lives and got to talk about like bigger things. And I think we both feel like that cemented our friendship pretty quickly. So that's a really specific example, but I think the broader point is taking a risk and proposing to someone that, you know, I like would really like to get to know you, be friends with you, like we're traveling or our schedules are crazy. Here's an idea of how we could keep in touch and maybe they'll be up for it. I think I've lately also really liked there are a bunch of conversation cards now that I think can move people into more interesting discussion. The one I've been using lately is from The Moth. So that's like something that you can just have, I guess, quite literally in your back pocket if you're meeting up and doing something that's, I don't know, just coffee, but you want to move it past what is just summarizing your life rather than getting to a new place together where you, and The Moth card specifically are about telling stories, but then you end up kind of getting to reflect. And it's like, how do you get to a place of vulnerability maybe a little bit faster? And then if you were just every so often meeting up for dinner, and I think making the overtures like you've already tried, it makes a big difference. And like, who doesn't, unless somebody is really awful, like who doesn't like to hear that somebody wants to be friends with them, thinks that they're great. And if they're too busy, then that's, they can tell you that. But I think for most people, that's a vast compliment.
Think about the closest friends you have now and ask yourself, who took the risk and how did it pay off? This can be anything from cracking a joke, right? Sometimes making a joke, like teasing each other, that requires a little bit of risk because you're essentially establishing closeness and kind of being like, hey, I'm comfortable enough around you to show my sense of humor, right? And I trust that you know that I like you enough that if I'm teasing you, it's just because I'm trying to have fun with you, not because I'm trying to put you down. That requires a little bit of risk. Or it could be the risk of having a difficult conversation. You know, one of my really closest friends and I, we kind of went through phases the past few years, mostly due to the pandemic and just like physically spending time apart. And then she had a baby and was dealing with postpartum. And I didn't really know how to show up for her, especially because it was the pandemic. And there was just a lot of anxiety around that. Over the years, it required a lot of difficult conversations. We took periods of space and then we'd come back together and talk about it. Just like in marriage, we talk about sometimes marriage is hard. Sometimes friendships are hard too. The interview with Raina Cohen was so juicy. Hers, Danielle Bayer Jackson's, and Priya Parker's, I really hope you listen to in full because it was extra hard to piece out clips for this specific episode, but the conversation goes so much deeper. And the one with Raina's was a little sexy because we talk about romantic and platonic relationships in parallel. We will go more into the romantic side in the next episode, but you know how Raina mentioned proposing to a friend? She literally used that word, proposing. Well, me and my best friend, Dolly, took that quite literally.
We had a lot of conversations recently on the podcast about the value of platonic friendship, and I love my marriage, but I also just want to go a lot deeper with my friendships. Mm. And that was when I proposed to you last night.
Also, like, just to paint the scene, when this happened, this was very movie, like, picturesque, kind of, like, gross how beautiful, like, the whole setting was. Okay, so we both have cute outfits on. We look cute. My hair was down. I had makeup on.
And then I had, like, a little cap on. Like, ooh, effortless.
Ooh, effortless.
But chic. Also, no makeup, perfect skin, turning 40. Does not wear sunscreen. Like, your skin makes me feel like sunscreen is a hoax.
I do raw dog it. I am so sorry.
In more ways.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh.
But yes.
So, okay. It's at night. We're in Lisbon. Beautiful, like, kind of like a dark street.
Oh, and we just spent the most perfect romantic day together. Brunch, coffee shops, deep talks, intermittent hugs, like shopping.
The second largest Zara in the world.
Yeah.
We saw like a very big ass Christmas tree. The moon is shining on it. Weather's perfect. Lights, cuteness. And then it was a bar that we had identified like earlier in the day or the day before.
I'm giving you full credit for this one because I would not have gone to this place because I'm like a Google review person and you're like a live in the moment novelty spontaneity.
Yes. Well, I actually really liked the lighting in this place, to be quite frank. Oh, my God. But it was low lit candles, kind of like unfinished walls, magazine clippings of cool, hot people.
Collaged,
decoupaged, potentially on the wall. Like the tapered red candles were lit.
Yeah.
Very low light, very dark, sexy.
Demure.
Books. Wood tables.
Dark academia.
There was someone with a really sick leather on leather outfit. That one dude with curly hair. I'm like, you look so cool. Like
tall boots.
Yeah.
Big heavy boots.
They all looked cool.
Like grunge. Yeah. It's very like, kind of like, I think what people associate with Berlin.
Yeah.
Like a lot of underground, a lot of like self-expression, a lot of, there were three men having the deepest conversation I've ever seen ever have. Like they're deep. They're sitting there for hours. No phones. They're laughing. They're having one drink. They're not even like drinking. So then the scene, we will close with this, the proposal.
Well, you did it first.
Well, I did it first. Yeah. I was just like, I believe in you and I want like the best for you. And I don't know. Yeah. Again, I don't know what I said. I just remember wanting to gush and love you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you proposed about an hour after that, you said the words, I am so committed to our friendship.
Yeah.
I don't care where I gotta fly. I don't care how much we gotta spend. I don't care how we gotta make it happen. But I am committed to like being old together. And I think earlier that day we said something like, you know, when people get old and they start arguing about what year something happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we'll be like, do you remember when we were in Portugal? What was that? 23? And you'll be like, no, bitch, it was 24. And I'll be like, no, I don't know. Well, it was December because there was the Christmas tree.
Yeah, but exactly like that.
But what if you put your heart out there and then get rejected?
The biggest thing about rejection is that we do it to ourselves. We reject ourselves before anybody else can reject us. Our brains jump to conclusions. We make up stories and it kind of functions like anxiety in a sense. Like, you know how with anxiety, you're basically thinking through every worst case scenario, believing that if you think everything through, then whatever comes at you won't surprise you. Like, it literally is a coping mechanism. Rejection kind of functions in the same way. We're like, okay, if I put up this wall and create this buffer, it won't hurt as badly if or when others do it to us. So we don't take risks. We tell ourselves that we're not good enough simply to avoid experiencing any kind of negative feedback. We're like, if only I don't like myself, and I'm the one who's telling myself that I'm not good enough, then I'll be more prepared
if or when somebody else does that, right? When you are dealing with rejection from or by another person, you kind of have two options, right? Because rejection is what happens when someone doesn't meet your expectations or you don't meet theirs. So there's like this mismatched in expectations. Like, I expected you to text me back right away, but you didn't, and that made me feel hurt. Or they expected you to adhere to their expectations of you and the way you need to be living your life, but you didn't. And rejection is what happens when there's a mismatch in expectations, and that pushback feels very, very personal. So you kind of have two options here. You can meet everyone's expectations at all times. You can do whatever you can to make sure other people meet yours. And that is, quite frankly, impossible and will drive you crazy. Or you can practice one of the four agreements from my favorite Toltec wisdom book called The Four Agreements, which I'm referencing on this podcast all the time, because every time we all need the reminder, especially of this one agreement, don't take anything personally. We have to start depersonalizing the people and the situations that we encounter, because what other people say or do or not say or not do has so, so little, almost nothing. The book says that it has nothing to do with you, because we are all our own walking clumps of cells, our own little universes, experiencing and perceiving life in a very unique way. And we're never going to understand what it's like to be someone else, because we are all so different and unique. The less personally we take things, the more free we are to exist with other people. And why is that? Because when we're not taking everything as in like, I, you did this to me and I am the center and you have to appease me, then again, we have a little bit more compassion for ourselves and for other people. And all of those stories, when we shed those away and when we leave them, we can simply experience another person or another situation for just who or what they are. Rejection is redirection. The more you get rejected, the closer you are to finding the people that do want to be there for you, or the job that was meant for you, or the home you were always supposed to live in. What is meant for you will choose you, just like you chose them or you chose it. So see rejection as life just altering your path a little bit to put you on the one you were always meant to be on. Another way we insidiously reject ourselves is by people-pleasing, placating someone else at the expense of our own needs, wants, and desires. Here's a rather fun bit with nurse practitioner and somatic coach, Bea Victoria Albina.
So people-pleasing is something that I know nothing about, cannot relate to. I don't even know like what that is. Is that something people struggle with, like pleasing other people and like putting their needs above our own? Is that a thing?
I don't know. Do you think it's a thing? Because if you think it's a thing, then I think it's a thing. I mean, would it make you happy if I thought it was a thing? Because then I'm totally available to like think it's a thing.
Oh my God. I just clicked what you did there.
Do you love me more now that I agree with you, Mary?
Oh my gosh, so much. Actually, can we be friends? Would you be okay with that? Or is that just like asking too much?
I mean, I don't mind, but it's like, do you want to be friends? Like, that's what I really want to know. Since you asked me, I want to know if you actually want that, or if you actually, do you hate me? And do I need to perform like tap dance for my lovability so that you think I'm good enough to be friends, even though you just asked me if we could be?
Maria Victoria, yes, my love. You are just so, did you ever take theater?
I mean,
improv?
I kind of am improv.
So what is people pleasing? Okay, for those who, I don't know, are unicorns and cannot relate, but mainly I want to hear about like, what are some of the hidden expressions of people pleasing?
Ooh, okay. So that's so good. So I talk about people pleasing as part of the constellation of experiences that makes up emotional outsourcing. So it's a term I came up with because I feel like codependency doesn't do anybody any favors, that term. It's kind of meaningless at this point, but it also means someone who's not me. And even though I was doing all the people pleasing, all the perfectionism, all the codependency, I didn't like the term. I think of like this enabling wife of an alcoholic man who, you know, like this character who's not me. And so I was not getting help from my codependent perfectionist or people-pleasing habits because I didn't fit the bill. So people-pleasing is part of emotional outsourcing, and it's when we chronically and habitually source our sense of worth, value, and safety in our nervous system from everyone and everything outside of ourselves instead of from within. So we were obviously doing a bit at the top of the show, and it was really fun. You're fun to riff with, but that's the more overt people-pleasing, right? What becomes most important for us is to keep others happy with us instead of pleasing ourselves, doing what's right for us, what keeps us happy. And instead of even trying to find balance, it's really just about putting others ahead of us. So the root of it really is this fear that we're not worthy, we're not lovable, there's something inherently wrong with us, we need to be fixed, we're broken. So we need to look to others and their experience of us, their way they express their experience of us, whether they are pleased with us, whether they find us palatable, like what we're doing, who we are, all of that is part of the people-pleasing picture.
Isn't Bea just such a joy to learn from? I highly recommend the full conversation and checking out her new book, End Emotional Outsourcing. But taking ownership of our emotions obviously doesn't mean that you can't lean on others. In fact, learning to ask for support is a key part of building healthy relationships. I think a lot of us have probably set some goals or intentions, things that we want to create for ourselves moving forward. And with that might come a urgent, frantic sense of hyper-independence, this energy of, I need to do all these things and I need to do it all myself. Hyper-independence could be holding us back. At least I know it holds me back. But I am so damn reluctant to ask for and subsequently receive help. I read a quote in The Artist's Way, which is the journaling book that I frequently keep coming back to. And Julia Cameron, the author, wrote, "The ego would rather pose as a creative loner than ask for help." Think of something small, because I do believe that how you do small things is how you do most all things. Think of something like, okay, I pulled up to the UPS store and I had a bunch of packages to like ship out and like Amazon returns and stuff. And I had so much shit in my arms. I tried to open the door with my foot. And when I say with my foot, like think of where the door handle is. It is high, right? Like I lifted my leg all the way up past a 90 degree angle to like a 120 degree angle to like hook my foot and open the door for myself as I'm holding all this stuff in my arms, rather than turning to the person walking through the other door in the shop next door and being like, "Hey, sir, excuse me, could you help get this door for me?" Right? Like how bizarre that we twist ourselves in so many different ways and directions just to avoid asking for help. Your self-worth is directly proportional to your willingness to receive. And I use the word receive here as synonymous to accept. So for example, like it's one thing for someone to show you love, but it's another beast to actually accept someone's love with an open heart. And that's the same with receiving help. Like if you're reluctant or resistant or refusing to receive help, that gentleman maybe opening the door for me would have made me feel not as good because I was like grr and gung-ho about doing it all myself. Whereas if I'm open to receiving a very simple act of kindness, then I am actually left feeling better, not just about myself, but the other person is also left feeling good about the small act of kindness that they showed. People do get a sense of satisfaction from helping somebody. And it's an act of generosity to give them an opportunity to do so. I'm not talking about taking advantage of people or asking for something so big and grand that's going to make them feel uncomfortable refusing, but small, simple ways that people can show up for you and allowing them the, again, opportunity to do so is going to bring you closer. The truth is, you probably can do it yourself, but do you want to? And vulnerability
It's not vulnerability unless it comes with a release of some control. That's why it's vulnerable, because you don't know how the other person's going to react. And you can't with 100% certainty predict the final result. Doing it all yourself isn't necessarily better. It's just more predictable. But I do believe that there is a way to safely and securely ask for and receive help. Fun fact, contrary to popular belief that asking for help makes you look weak, the research shows that asking someone for a small favor will actually make them feel more positively toward you. There's an exchange of trust happening, something really deeply human about helping or being helped. And this kind of relates to the last piece of advice, the last clip that I want to share with you. And it's about celebrating your friends and letting your friends celebrate you.
I truly believe that we teach what we most have to learn. So even though I talk a lot about friendship and connection and true deep sisterhood, and I adore my sister, and I, of course, I love all of my friends, sometimes it's hard to like practice that and to actually bring people together. When it came to like wedding planning, when I was in the midst of that, it was so tempting to just kind of throw your hands up in the air and be like, I'm too tired. I don't want to plan anything else. I had thoughts like, who would even come to a bachelorette? Like, none of my friends know each other. They're from all over the US. I don't have like this solid group of girls that I wish I did, that I hang out with like every week or every month. And because of those like little mental blocks, I almost didn't have this bachelorette. And then I got this advice from a friend, which I want to pass on to you. I don't remember how she said it. It was way more eloquent than this. But what I got away from it was three and a half words. Don't skip steps. Don't skip steps. Again, I know that sometimes you might want to omit some kind of milestone celebration or gathering or act like it's like no big deal and you're too busy with other things. And maybe you genuinely do want to take that time instead to rest and be with yourself. By all means, do you. I felt like this at first too, but I am so glad that this one friend really pushed me gently, and all it took was like a couple text exchanges. Through this conversation, she just like pushed me to let myself be celebrated and like let myself be in that bride mode, as cheesy as it was, and get my girls together, knowing that like whoever wants to be there will make it happen, and that people can put their differences aside to all hang out with each other or get to know each other fresh. And actually, two of my friends ended up becoming best friends and then went on like two, three other trips together this year alone. They're like two peas in a pod, and I'm obsessed with that bestie matchmaking that happened through my bachelorette. After having that experience with my girls, I know that's something that I'm going to practice through every like milestone or big kind of like phase in my life, right? Like there's a reason why people do and celebrate and mark certain events in the form of a gathering, in the form of a ceremony. This year, we also had Priya Parker on the show, and she wrote this amazing book called The Art of Gathering. And I first picked it up to be like a better retreat host and leader, but then I ended up using it for just like little dinner parties at my house, or like getting together with family, or something like a bachelorette, my wedding planning. So we did this whole episode kind of centered around wedding planning and the importance of community. Even if there's conflict within that community, it still might behoove us to lean into gathering more often. And I think after the pandemic, a lot of people are on board with this idea. But in case you find yourself like a little bit more hesitant or introverted in that way, don't skip steps. Celebrate your accomplishments. Get people together. Money can be made back, but memories, experiences, this time in your life will never be this time in your life ever again.
Thanks so much for venerating friendships and making a concerted effort to create connection in your life. We really need that.
as like a healing power right now, both individually and collectively. And thank you for listening to this best of episode. I hope it gave you a little inspiration, some laughs, maybe a nudge to reach out to a friend today. If you enjoyed this best of episode or any of the episodes from Mary's Cup of Tea, I'd love if you left a review. This project was quite an undertaking to, you know, sit down, dig through clips, compile them all. And I really want to know if you're enjoying it. So feel free to leave a comment on Spotify, a star rating, or a review on Apple. That really helps the show grow and spread the gift of self-love. If you're enjoying our self-love podcast, please take a moment to leave a comment or a review letting me know what your biggest takeaway was. As somebody who works mostly behind the scenes on this podcast, I love hearing from you, and it just keeps me connected to the purpose, which is always to spread the gift of self-love.